I'm listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gwyneth-Cheesh, Awa Toksknusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You may also join us on our live stream via KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, we feature a look into Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Indigenous Science Building and all the variety of programming it offers, from classes in traditional food preparation to working with media in their digital services lab, among other features. Southeast Alaska Independent Living is offering Learn to Adapt Day at Eagle Crest this Saturday, featuring adaptive ski equipment such as the bi-ski, slider apparatus, and outriggers for three-tracking. We have a preview with Emma Van Ness from SAIL. And Barbara Craver is featured this Saturday during the Sketching at the Museum series. We talk with Barbara about her special watercolor process, gouache, and what she will be sharing this Saturday. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kushtuk U Bill Fawcett, and the word this week is dleit.
Dleit.
That means snow. And here's a sentence. It's really snowing. Let's hear it again.
Great.
Snow. Gwyneth-Cheesh Tuchnay Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtuk O'ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a Southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihwa Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Occoquan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon at KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Indigenous Science Building is a hub for SHI's education programs and hands-on learning grounded in Indigenous knowledge, languages, and values. It features a traditional foods kitchen, three cutting-edge labs, including a digital media lab and an Indigenous science lab. It's a unique and resource-driven addition to the community space. And today, I'm honored to chat more about it with my guests. We have Kelly Patricia Lynch, who is the STEAM program manager. Gwyneth-Cheesh, Wasiatik. Kelly, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Welcome. Gwyneth-Cheesh. I also have Joe Zuboff, the cultural specialist for the Cultural Warriors Program. Gwyneth-Cheesh, Wasiati. Joe, how are you?
Good. Great. Thank you.
Excellent. And I also have Paul Leininger, Indigenous Science Building and Program Associate. Gwyneth-Cheesh, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's so excellent to have you all here. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know that this building, the Indigenous Sciences Building, is fairly new. It's been around. How long has it been around? Who wants to answer that question? Paul.
That is a great question. We moved in about a year ago.
Yeah. But you know,
you may have noticed we're still finishing the upstairs office spaces, but the downstairs we've had programming going on for a solid year now, and we're continuing to build out that programming.
Yeah, last fall, my partner Aaron Tripp and I, we took a class, like a six-week class in the traditional foods kitchen where it was making soups every week from different, you know, things, traditional foods and preparation and going over that and then being able to try it and sort of have a community space and eat with everyone. It was really fantastic. That was my first sort of introduction to the building. But then as I was peeking around the corner, I was like, oh, there's like a lab over there where we're working with the TCLL program, and it's like other things going on. And then we had a story here at KTO about some kids who are like working on podcasting in the digital media lab. And so I was just like, wow, this is like all encompassing. So tell me a little bit, Paul, about your work as the program associate. What is it that you do?
That's a great question.
Everything. Number 9, other duties as assigned.
Absolutely. You know, I do love to jump in wherever I'm needed. And that really is kind of my role, is just helping to make sure that the SHI staff have the resources that they need to do all of the amazing programming that we do.
Yeah.
So I help, you know, get a lot of the equipment, and I do a lot of the help staff get trained on how to use everything from freeze dryers to laser cutters, so that, you know, when they come in to do these programming, they feel comfortable using everything in that building and sharing that knowledge with all of our participants.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, I know that there has been a lot of, I mean, in the introduction, I said it's sort of a hub for education and other learning and also science research and stuff like that. So where did the idea for this Indigenous Science Center originate?
You know, it really came from wanting to do more, you know, hands-on activities with our students. We have a number of amazing grants that we get to work with teachers and students throughout Southeast, but we don't have a ton of space for doing things on campus. You know, we have the Otanene Arts Campus, where we have some programming there, but we really wanted more of a space dedicated to youth programming, and it slowly grew as we reached out to the community and partners and tried to figure out what the need was and what people wanted, and it turned into this whole building focused around that traditional foods and medicines kitchen. That started as the small space, but as we reached out to folks for feedback, it very quickly became the biggest room in the building.
The traditional kitchen space?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a fantastic space, and I just want to put this up on the screen for those who might be on the web stream. But there is a kitchen series that is, I think, kicking off tonight. Is that right?
No, we didn't. We actually had to cancel this evening.
Oh, this evening's not happening. Okay.
Unfortunately, we just didn't have enough people to sign up. So if you want to sign up for our Wednesday cooking series, please do. It's every other Wednesday with our STEAM instructor, Khalil English.
Okay, yeah.
And we'll just be going over some basic cooking of different sauces you can do with traditional foods, different ways you can prepare your traditional foods. And as we get later into the spring, we're going to be talking a lot more about those early spring harvests.
Oh, excellent. So, that's a perfect time, right?
All your shoots, everything, and how you can eat those like right away, because they're you can freeze some of those things, but they're really just the best, like to just pick them out of the ground and wash them off and put them in your mouth.
That's awesome. Well, I know that there's a QR code on the screen, but I'm also going to give out this link, which is where I think you sign up, right? So
yes.
bit.ly/biweeklykitchen26. But I believe that Bitly's is cap sensitive. So you have to make sure that you do biweeklykitchen26, and the B, the W, and the K are capitalized. I believe it's cap sensitive. Told me that Bitly is does do cap sensitive. But you can also find it by going to Sea Alaska Heritage Facebook page. And
correct.
That is where I think a lot of classes get posted, not only for like the traditional kitchen, but the other stuff at the art campus. And so you have to look through the list and see what's actually there. But that's where I found this image, was from the Facebook page. But I also just want to mention this, because I thought this was cool. There was a couple pictures from the recent canning workshop that you did. And this room looks full. This looks like it was a lot of fun. There's a lot of great pictures on the Facebook page from this. Can you tell me a little bit about that, Kelly?
So the canning workshop did get full quickly, so quickly that we're holding another one on Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday.
Is also full, I'm sorry to say. We have been working on creating a monthly kitchen series. So we did jam making to start with, which is water bath canning. We moved on to vegetable canning, and now we're working on canning meats.
Nice.
To kind of give people those skills that they need for their harvests for the year.
Ah, okay.
And that is the reason of doing the canning workshops. We're working on some freeze-drying workshops, some dehydration workshops as well later in the spring. Different ways to get the most out of the bounty that you're able to get from the land.
I see. And where do you, like this, this was a deer, right? Zhongwu?
Yes.
And this was...
Mountain goat.
Huh?
Oh,
this was mountain goat.
Was that mountain goat? I wasn't at that particular one.
Yeah, okay. Zhongwu, yeah, that was the mountain goat.
Oh, that was a mountain goat. Okay.
There was Zhongwu and there was Goakon, so deer.
Okay.
And we...
Oh, I have my words mixed up there.
It's okay. We had both those meats that people were able to experience canning. The canning either one of those meats is a close process, same pressure,
similar,
same time.
Yeah. And where does how does this work? I know when we were taking the soup class that there was we were waiting for, I think, some Zhongwu, and it was like they were actually somebody was sourcing it, was getting it from the land. Was that you, Joe?
Partly. Yep.
You and another crew?
There was a crew of us.
Crew of you went out?
Yep.
Okay. That was because I remember I'd never had it before. I'd never had mountain goat before. And I think that was mountain goat chili, I think, or something that we made or that they made. Mm-hmm. And then we got to enjoy. And it was yummy. I have to say that was one of my favorite soups for sure during that process. So those classes, Kelly... you're trying to make it a monthly series. Is that something that people can sign up for? And where do we watch out for those?
On Facebook.
Facebook,
and
okay.
So we'll have a couple more of those monthly series. We'll have the biweekly Wednesdays. And then starting Saturdays in April, every other Saturday we'll start having plant walks.
Oh, nice.
So you're going to be able to go out with either our STEAM instructor or another plant expert here in Juneau and harvest, and then if we have time, come back to the kitchen and learn how to process it as well.
I see. Okay. Now, Kelly, since we're talking with you as the STEAM program manager, and thank you for putting the A in there, so because a lot of people leave out the A, the arts. Can you tell me about the STEAM program and what that is and what your work is in that?
So we actually have 7 communities that we work in, and we're working with Hoonah, Angoon, Sitka, Wrangell. We have partners in Anchorage, here in Juneau, and then Craig and Klawak on Prince of Wales Island.
Oh, wow.
And so we've done a lot of work with teachers in those communities. And like Paul was saying, one of the problems we had was working out lessons and plans and making things for those rural communities. We didn't have anywhere to, you know, try things out. So we were really annoying everybody in the Walter Soboloff with like our robots and our trebuchets made from a glowforge, and they're happy we're in a different building now where we have, you know, our laser cutter room. And so the grant is at the end of, we're in our fourth year, and we're just finishing up a few grant goals of having 300 events in the building.
Wow.
And we're at 271 or 2 at this point.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but all those events are not just us. So we have lots of other grants. So every time they have an event in the building, it counts as one of our events.
Right.
So which is great.
Do you think you're going to try to get that grant renewed so you can continue?
We're looking at some different grants and different ways of making sure that we have like really responsive programming to the communities and what they need.
I see.
But I think that, yes, continuing on science programming is really important for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, let's chat about the Cultural Warriors Program. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is and how it integrates into the science building?
And, well, the Cultural Warriors Program is... captures young men from each community. So we have like 6 communities, I believe, with 2 young men and an uncle. We used to call it the Uncles Program, and that changed into the Cultural Warriors Program. We have some elders that guide the uncles and the uncles that teach the young men. So our main goal is to get a couple young men from each community that need some help in learning how to fish and hunt and process for each community and teach them their culture, which helps them find their identity and then hopefully find a career path for them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a large, a large group of men that are losing their lives, that are not moving forward in life and tend to end their life. So we started the Uncles program knowing that there are a lot of young men there that don't have fathers or uncles to help them grow up. So back in the day, the uncles would take the children from the mother and father and teach them to be men, which would be hunting and fishing and helping their community, being a part of their community, and learning to process the fish. So the kitchen that we have here has worked great. I've been able to bring some seals in, some deer. We did the mountain goats right on the table inside. And,
wow.
And we were able to skin them out and start processing. That kitchen has been an eye-opener because it's a lot nicer to do it inside than it is to do it outside right now.
Especially today. It's cold today.
Yeah, with everything right there at our facility, it works out great in Juneau. It'd be nice if there was more in the smaller communities to where we can assist them in that, and where the uncles from each community would be able to help out. Processing using new equipment, not the old equipment. We're using up-to-date equipment with processing. Vacuum sealers, new vacuum sealers. We've sent some out to various communities, so that's available to a lot of our uncles too. Teach our young men how to process, and then the reward is they get to give that away to their elders, and that's becoming part of that community. So it's important that they learn how to be safe. We teach them gun safety. We teach them first aid, boat handling, hunting techniques, and, of course, processing them and putting them on the table and sharing it with the elders.
You mentioned bringing some young men from other communities. Are they coming and being able to participate here in Juneau at this Indigenous Science Building?
Yes, we have had them in various communities. We have our next, in April, we're all going to Sitka to hopefully do some herring egg processing.
Yeah.
If that works out. And if not, we're going to teach them the history that happened in Sitka, not by us, but by an elder from there. Because it's not appropriate for outsiders to talk about history in other communities. But they also have a very large totem pole over there, totem poles over there. And a lot of history. So that's coming up. Our offboarding will be in Huna. That means the ones that are with us now will be graduating. And then that'll be happening in May. And I believe we'll go through the celebration. And then we're going to start looking for more young men in June, middle of June, 18th through the 20th.
So you said graduate. So is this a program that is it a specific age that you're looking for? And then how long would they be in it for?
Yes, we're looking for the 17-year-olds up to the 22, I believe.
Okay. And how long do they stay in the program?
We do 1 year.
1 year, okay. Yeah.
And
so it's a 1 year.
We do
program.
A mentorship once a month right now. It's a couple hours a month teaching the culture. Memorial settings to Nakanis to Ko'iks. So we're getting into the what they used to call payoff parties and the function and whys and introducing them, their culture, help them find who they are.
And if somebody wanted to maybe get their son enrolled in this program, how do they find is it easily like in my search engine?
Yes, we will have flyers out. It'll be online, and it's probably a short window.
Yeah.
We're looking for the young men that need the help.
Yeah.
And We have a lot of high school men, young men that are in there, but their schedules are real conflicting with what we're trying to do. We're looking for the weekend warrior type that'll be able to go out and do some hunting.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And learn. So
yeah, I got you.
It's been interesting. We're going through the learning phase, and it's hopefully it's going to be a lot easier as we grow to get a lot of these young men.
It's a cool program.
Heidelberg, Cake, Haines, or Klukwan, Angoon.
Yeah.
Sitka, of course.
Yeah, that's fantastic. The Culture Warriors program, put that in your search engine or probably on the Sea Alaska Heritage website. You can always go to SeaAlaskaHeritage.org.
Or you can email Michelle Martin, michelle.martin@SeaAlaskaHeritage.com.
There you go.
Yes. She's our grant program manager.
All right. michelle.martin@SeaAlaskaHeritage.com. I love that. And if people haven't been to the physical space, I know Joe was talking about being able to lay out a mountain goat. And I mean, it's the windows are there. You can walk by. I mean, this is right. If you haven't been to it yet, it's right next to the Walter Sobolev building. And where the clan house is and all. And it's right there on Heritage Way. It's right across from the plaza. And it's where the old Capitol Copy used to be, basically, if you remember that location. And the glass windows are there, and you can look in and see, I guess, BC, maybe what's going on in there. You can also find out, if it's open, you can go in and say hi, I'm sure. Right?
So once a month on First Friday, we have been holding open time to come into the building.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And it's mostly just kitchen-based, but if you're interested, we always have enough staff there to do a quick tour of the different spaces.
Yeah, so let's talk. We talked a lot about the kitchen. Let's talk about these other spaces. I'm curious about the digital media lab. What goes on in there? Who can talk to me about that?
I think it's great to look through the windows and you can see the kitchen and the classroom on that first floor, but it's really important to realize there's a basement in that building, and that's where half of the programming space is. So we have a big digital media lab in the basement with a sound studio. It's a really nice sound booth. It's extremely quiet and deadened in there. So we have a bunch of high-end audio mixing equipment, as well as video equipment, a green screen. So we've been partnering with Zach Gordon Youth Center to have kids come over after school and do a podcast club, utilizing the audio equipment and the cameras and green screen, and the kids are getting to learn all of the techniques for audio and video switching.
You have a green screen.
We do, yeah.
I'm teaching a film acting course at Zach Gordon here soon.
Ooh.
I'm curious. We should talk.
We should, yes.
That would be kind of fun to learn the green screen with the kids. That would be really interesting.
We regularly partner with lots of different organizations.
Yeah.
Like at HIDA, Zach Gordon, the school district.
Nice.
So we're always open to having more collaborations.
Yeah. That's really cool down there. That space sounds amazing.
Yeah, and that's just one of the three spaces in the basement. There's also the STEAM Research Lab, where we'll have some programs like this summer. We'll have a fish DNA camp where people
get
to analyze DNA.
With a microscope and stuff?
Yeah.
Computers and all that?
Yeah, it's really incredible. When I was in college 10 years ago, the equipment would have taken up the entire room, and now it's just a little 12-by-12-inch box.
Right.
It's incredible.
That's pretty amazing. So the idea is behind this building is education, right? And also community partnership as well, and also then serving tribal citizens in different ways. What's the future hope for the building, your program, the STEAM program? What is it that you want to see 5 years from now? This building is so new, it's all fresh, and it has all these great things. What would you love to see happen in a few years?
I'm thinking about, we just did a regalia making class where we used the lasers to make the clan crests for the backs of people's vests. And one of the things that we get to do now that we've kind of we've tried it out here, is we're going to take that to Angoon and Hoonah as well.
Oh, cool.
So one of the parts of my grant was to provide our communities with glowforges and 3D printers. So there's already kind of sister equipment in some of these rural places. Mm. And we want to make sure that we're continuing to provide the services, that our building is a hub for all of Southeast, and that we're able to try something out in the building, say, okay, this great, this works. How can we get this out to Klawock? How can we get it out to Craig? How can we get it out to Kasan? Mm. Not just Prince of Wales, but those are some of the places on the top of my list right now. And just, I think having as many partnerships and people being able to utilize that building and utilize that space and learn how to use that equipment. Looking at like career paths, some of our equipment, our CNC machine is amazing.
What's a CNC?
How do you call that?
CNC are computer numeric control, but most people just think of them as big, huge computer controlled router. It's a big carving machine. But you know, that is a legitimate career path as a CNC operator.
And that's where, I mean, like Joe's program, you know, it also gives opportunity for these young gentlemen and ladies to find these different ideas and like ways that they might be able to work inside their culture and do a job that might be beneficial to the whole community, right?
Absolutely. Like Wrangell has a CNC plasma cutter and they use it to make, make boats with their students. So it's technology that, is very applicable and can be transferred to other areas very easily.
What would you like to see in a few years, Paul?
I think similar to what Kelly said, just continuing to branch out that hub and spoke model and having more people just consistently in that space. I really love how we're able to bring in 10,000 plus years of traditional knowledge and see how that then gets used with contemporary technology The melding of those two is really amazing, and I just want to continue to see that equipment getting used and people coming up with new creative ideas for things that they can do.
Yeah, that's cool. And what about you, Joe? What would you like to see for the Cultural Warriors program in like 5 years?
I would like to see one or two or three young men come back to Sea Alaska Heritage and be teachers. Mm. To keep these programs going, because they're very, very important within our culture. And that's starting to happen now. I'm seeing some young men that started early on and are now Tlingit language teachers.
Oh, nice.
So this tells me that Sea Alaska Heritage is growing and it's succeeding. Mm. But it's been a while. I'd love the idea of the science behind all this, because it's going to help a lot of our young men and women from the smaller communities to find a career path that they would love doing, whether it's making vests out of lasers now. I mean, hey, that's and finding out the DNA of yourself and the creatures that you're living off of.
Yeah.
And becoming a scientist, it's all possible. That's kind of what I want to see the Cultural Warriors, is to let a lot of these young people that are in the smaller communities that do not know that they can do this, that we're able to show them and help them grow in a bigger community and then go back and be a part of the community.
Yeah, and give back.
Yes. I have, my son just became a teacher in the spring.
Oh, that's so cool.
Last year. And I had no idea that's what he wanted, but it's like I always tell the young ones, follow what you love doing and proceed that.
Yeah, absolutely. Kelly, is there anything else that you want to mention about the Indigenous Sciences Building that we haven't talked about?
Oh, we talked about so many things.
Yeah.
I recently counted up all the people that came into the Indigenous Science Building. It was like 2,000, which is really exciting. We have almost like 8 programs that work in the building from birth through college. We have like all these different grants. There's a lot of great programming that's going on. If people want to partner with us, I encourage them to reach out to us. You can find my email on the website. I think that's it, Paul.
Yeah. That's great. Well, you can always find everything on the Sea Alaska Heritage Facebook page. It's where a lot of the classes get listed, the events that are coming up. And as Kelly mentioned, every first Friday when you're downtown looking at all the art, stop by the Traditional Foods Kitchen, say hello, get a little tour of what's happening in there. Get your kids signed up for the various different programs that they offer and find out about this place. It's really cool. It's so new and it's so fun. And it's just a great addition to the community and the resources. And I love the idea of like that people are learning all this and then sort of giving back. And maybe there'll be other Indigenous science buildings put up in other communities. Yes. That would be kind of cool. Yeah.
I definitely think that would be a good
future. Kelly, Patricia Lynch, Joe Zuboff, and Paul Leininger, thank you so much, Gunachish, for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, KTOO, for having us.
Of course. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. 5 years ago, Winter Storm Uri knocked out power across much of Texas during a frigid cold snap.
It was a statewide traumatic experience for millions of Texans, but for specific groups of disabled people, the loss of heat had extra layers of danger.
In her new book, Disabled Power, Angela Frederick of the University of Texas at El Paso shares what some of them endured during the disaster. She says some people with chronic conditions, like MS, suffer severe pain and lose mobility during extreme heat or cold.
So some of the people I interviewed weren't able to get out of their beds during the days that they went without heat in their homes because their bodies just shut down.
And some people with spinal cord injuries cannot regulate their body temperature, so exposure to the cold can be life-threatening. Power outages also threaten those who need electricity to power wheelchairs or medical devices like ventilators. So as climate change causes more extreme weather, Frederick says communities and government should partner with disability groups to better understand the risks and plan how to protect people. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon from your public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Saturday, February 21st, from 10 to 1 p.m. up at Eagle Crest Ski Area, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, or SAIL, is sponsoring Learn to Adapt Day, a free community event to learn about adaptive ski equipment. And here to share some details and a preview is Bridget Thompson, the operations director for SAIL. Gunachish Ayigudi, thank you so much, Bridget. Welcome back to the show. Good to see you again, Wasiati. How are you?
Good to see you too. I'm doing good.
Okay.
Thanks for asking.
So, just for those who don't know, remind people about SAIL.
Yeah. So SAIL, also known as Southeast Alaska Independent Living, is a center for independent living, and we assist people with disabilities or people who are aging through a variety of programs. So we've got a traumatic and acquired brain injury program. We run peer support groups for folks who are low vision, who have a traumatic or acquired brain injury. And we've got, so that's an example of a couple different programs that we have. And overall, we're just there to be a resource center for people who have a disability or who are aging to live a more independent life.
Absolutely. So, it's a great service. And of course, you can find out everything about SAIL at sailinc.org. And that is where you'll see this cool flyer for this event that's coming up on Saturday. It's a free event. It's Learn to Adapt Day. How did this day come about?
Yeah. So, well, we have our adaptive ski program up at Eagle Crest. And we work with people to make the outdoors accessible for everybody. So that means that people who have different types of disabilities use different types of adaptive equipment to be able to ski or snowboard or recreate. But Learn to Adapt Day grew out of that, of just like being in a community event that can you can come and try this out. So if you find yourself at Eagle Crest on the weekends, you might see our Orca crew up there, our outdoor recreation and community access. We shorten it to Orca, working with people and on what we call the bi ski. So it's like a sit ski. It's for people who might not have control over their lower, like have lower mobility control. And so they'll actually, in order to ski, they're going to sit. And sometimes they can do it assisted. So we call it tethering, where somebody is behind them and they more or less kind of help steer to get them down the mountain. And sometimes people can do it unassisted too. So it's just a different way to ski for somebody who might have a lower injury.
So you sit down and are you still on skis or is it more like a sled? No.
Yeah, you're actually still on skis.
Wow.
So you can kind of imagine
it. Turn and stuff?
Yep, like the chair I'm sitting in, except then there's two skis on it. And then you can also add what's called outriggers. And there's these two, you put one on each hand. And it's what you use to steer. So you're using a lot of your core to steer and make those turns to go down the mountain.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. And it's a super, like, cool adaptive tool. Our program has a couple of them. And we ski with people of all ages. So we've got some super young folks that we ski with, you know, like 6, 7, 8, you know, really young all the way up to we've had people who are 60 plus.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Come ski.
And you also have something called a slider apparatus.
Yeah.
What is that?
A slider is a tool that you use, you typically are standing on skis. So you would be on your own skis, but then you have this tool that you kind of grab onto, and I'm trying to it almost is like a upright walker, and it's also got skis on it. So if you look at it, you've got two pairs of your own skis and two pairs, like one set for the slider, and you're kind of helping it. It helps you stand upright. And it gives you something to lean on.
Is it like a Segway for skiing in a sense? Like, I mean, imagining like somebody standing, right?
Yep. But and then they're going to be doing all their own turns with the slider.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So the slider doesn't do any of the movement. They're doing that, but it's kind of used as a guide.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you steer it.
In a way, okay. It would like kind of like help. It would
You use your body probably too a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it's something that you would be standing and holding on to the slider and kind of going down the mountain, and then you can do that also assisted. So there's usually one of our Orca folks on either end of it to kind of help somebody make those turns to go down the mountain.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then what's an outrigger for three?
Three track?
What is that?
We're just getting everybody used to our outdoor rec logo. I mean, lingo.
Yeah.
So a three track is somebody who skis with one of their legs and two outriggers. And those outriggers are the things that I was telling you that you hold on to with one on each hand.
Okay.
And you help use those to ski. An outrigger is It's like it's a piece of metal with a foot on it that looks like a ski, but it's only about like 10 inches long. So the ski on that outrigger is really short. And so that's what you're using. Those are – you're holding on to them, but those outriggers are what touch the snow. So those are what's – that's what's balancing you on the snow.
I see.
Yeah. That's so really somebody cool. who three tracks is skiing on one of their legs and two outriggers. So you would imagine like somebody standing and picking up one of their legs and then using those outriggers to help them balance.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Now this event on Saturday, we're talking about the SAIL Learn to Adapt Day here on Juneau Afternoon. It's this Saturday from 10 to 1 p.m. It's up at the Eagle Crest ski area. Do we have to sign up or how do we get involved in this?
You can come on by anytime from 10 to 1. We'll be set up on right at the bottom of the Porcupine chairlift.
Okay.
So we've got a a table out there and we have a little sign up sheet that you can sign up right then and there. Sometimes there's a little bit of a line the team might say, okay, well, you know, maybe in 30 minutes and you can go do a run or two and then come back and try out the bi-ski.
Okay.
But we'll have a table set up with a bunch of people there.
And we're supposed to get some fresh snow tomorrow maybe. So
yeah,
who knows?
Crossed.
Maybe it'll be some fresh snow out there on Saturday. And who is this for? Is it people who've already been involved in SAIL programming or can people who've never been involved and are just curious about this equipment or maybe they're new to Juneau and they haven't even heard of SAIL before?
Yeah, everybody. It is open to everybody. It's open to people who are curious about learning about it. Mm-hmm. If you've seen it and you're like, what is that? Like,
yeah.
I've been up at Eagle Crest and I've seen people using this, like, chair ski thing. Come check it out. And you can take a ride in it. And our team will go up the Porcupine lift and come down. And you can try out what it would feel like to ski in this bi-ski.
Is there a weight limit asking for a friend?
Yes, there is a weight limit on the bi-ski.
Okay, is that?
185 pounds for the bi-ski.
Oh.
That's the sit ski. And then the outriggers, no weight limit at all. Like you could try those out and
now, because someone who hasn't skied in, let's say, 30 some odd years. Who's a little afraid of skiing?
Yeah,
is the outrigger gonna help me? Like, would it help me with some of my fears of like falling, or I still gonna fall?
You might still fall.
Uh huh.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't prevent anybody from falling. Because it's kind of it would be you would replace it with your ski poles, right? So you would like typically like if I were or you were to go up or anybody were to go up, you would get your skis and you'd get outfitted with your ski poles. We would just replace the ski poles with the outriggers.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a bi-ski for larger folks?
You know, part of it is the I am not 100% sure on the bi-skis that we have up there now.
Yeah.
And part of it is because we do like a human lift to get people onto the chair.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't want to.
So it's not always the.
Pick me up is what you're saying. I get it, Bridget. It's okay. It's the Learn to Adapt Day from SAIL. You can go to sailinc.org for more information about all their programming. This event is free on Saturday from 10 to 1 p.m. up at Eagle Crest. Just show up, sign up, give a ride on the bi-ski or the outrigger or the slider apparatus or whatever else is going on up there.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it is a really cool event and a large reason why we can make it free and open to the public is thanks to our sponsors with Hecla. So they help us put on the event and sponsor the ski program. And so we always like to give them a big thank you for helping us make it accessible to the community.
I love that. Bridget Thompson, thank you so much for coming in and sharing a little bit about this with us today.
Thank you so much.
Gonna cheese.
Gonna cheese.
This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Bird Note. A flock of jays is emerging at the forest edge. Their heads are blue and white, with a long black crest curling forward. As they glide out from the trees, the whole bird becomes visible, white bellies and blue backs. Their spectacular tails are about as long as the rest of their bodies. They're called white-throated magpie jays, named for the long tail reminiscent of a magpie's. Found in much of Central America, white-throated magpie jay flocks are family groups led by a dominant female. They include a mate and several female offspring that bring food to the primary female and her young. It's an example of cooperative breeding, when birds other than the parents help out to raise young. Magpie jays have an astonishing vocal system. Male magpie jays are the big talkers. Each one may use more than 60 vocalizations. Nearly 50 species of jays are found around the world, each distinctive, each with its own complex society. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shoe yi, we ka shook a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikach, gunnish cheesh.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Sketching at the Museum series continues this Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30 with Barbara Craver, who will take you step by step through her gouache process. What is a gouache process? We're going to find that out. Barbara joins me now in studio. Gunnath Cheesh Wasiti. How are you today, Barbara?
Gunnath Cheesh Wa'ekua. I assume you're well, too.
That's good. I didn't know that one. That's good.
Wa'ekua. How are you?
Oh, okay.
And
I
then
see.
And you say yak-e.
Yak-e. Yes, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Barbara. That's good. Helping me along my language journey.
Oh, man, we all need to go on it,
So this I'm going to pull up the flyer for this Sketching in the Museum. Mm-hmm. It's a series that's been going on at the museum for a few months now.
Yeah.
And basically what it is it's like once a month, I think.
I think it's twice a month.
Twice a month. There's a schedule for it. You can check it out. You can go to lam.alaska.gov. I'm sure you can find the schedule on there. But what they do is they bring in somebody like Barbara, and they talk about the process that they use in making their work. And so this Saturday, you're going to be going over gouache.
Yes.
What is gouache?
Gouache is spelled in a very strange way, G-O-U-A-C-H-E.
It's French.
As a bad speller, I have a hard time getting all those vowels in the right order.
There's a lot
order.
Of vowels in there. Don't do gauche.
Yeah, gauche or gauche. Gouache or,
yeah, yeah.
or goulash.
Yeah,
well, call it whatever you like.
It's gouache.
But it's a very cool medium, and apparently it's not a new medium. I mean, watercolor is not new either, but it was most recently, I think, used in like the 1950s, 40s, 50s, and whatever, because it is a water-based medium, and it dries very quickly, and like advertising and brochures and things for magazines used to be people would use gouache for it because it dried really quickly. And the artists who created all the illustrations for the cigarettes and cars and all those beautiful things were done in gouache and then photographed.
Oh, interesting.
And then printed. And because they didn't have, you know, computer animation.
Right, right.
So it's a very, very versatile medium, and you can get effects, almost any kind of effect. I can't, but some people can.
Like what kind of things? What kind of effects?
Well, it's what the nice thing about it is you paint in layers. So like with watercolor, it's a beautiful medium, and the paint and the pigment itself just, you know, spreads and does wonderful effects. But with gouache, you can use it sort of like a watercolor. It can be very transparent. But for me, the big advantage is you can make it opaque and you can cover your mistakes.
And that's the secret to gouache, right? Is that it's not the transparent.
Right.
And it provides this layer. It's fast drying, right?
Yes, it's very fast drying.
So you can don't have to wait too long before you can start adding more layers.
No, in fact, it's kind of a race sometimes.
Oh,
you know,
interesting.
Because if you want to, you can go back in and your second layer, if you put it on too fast, or you may do it intentionally, it will somewhat blend with the layer right underneath it because these pigments can be reactivated with water, which is why you can put it in a little tin like this, like in a watercolor tin, and take it out with you dry.
And then you just you
mush your pen, your brush in it and re-wet it, and then you can put it right over the stuff you did before.
So these you buy like gouache colors.
Okay, you buy them in tubes.
You buy them in tubes. Okay.
So they and that is another way of using gouache. Some people will use the gouache from the tube, be probably in their studio, and put them out. Squirt out little amounts of color and then mix the colors to put on their painting. But I have found that using dried gouache, which is used by a lot of people who paint outside, is much handier and quicker. And I have pre-mixed a lot of colors, so I don't have to spend as much time mixing colors. I just have a color that I can modulate a little bit.
You're on the fly, you don't have to think about it too much.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Because I'm looking at one of the pictures that you sent me on the stream here, it's the picture where you have the different colors on the platter.
I sent you, the kits.
Yeah, the Scarlet Lake, magenta, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. And then in some of them, you're mixing a couple colors together to create those. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is not, I don't want to get too much into art theory, but there are primary colors and you mix them to get the secondary colors. This is something that I use for painting outside a lot or painting outdoor scenes. And a lot of natural colors are fairly subtle. They are not pure colors. They're not a bright yellow or a bright red or a bright blue. There's tons of greens, tons of browns, stuff like that. So the colors that I'm providing on a little piece of paper, a card, are going to be they're dried dots of gouache paint that you can reactivate with water, and then you can mix them. And so that, you can see it, like a French gray is one of the colors up in the left-hand corner.
Yeah.
And that color is so darn useful.
You
think it'd be but it's like, God, we've got all these distant mountains here and things that as they go into the distance, they get grayer and they look further away. So
I see.
A thing like that, you can modify a really bright blue with that and get it to be a little more subtle blue, and that will help you get distance in your paintings.
I see. Okay, so this Saturday, Barbara.
Yes.
What's going to be happening during the sketching in the museum from 1:30 to 3:30?
So people are going to get these cute little kits.
Nice.
They're not that cute, but they're usable. And because I think that the only way you're going to be able to use the gouache is if you practice it. And practice it with somebody who can reassure you that, yes, it's going to look kind of funny at first. It's going to be really light, but you can go over it. And this is how you let it dry. And I'm just going to show them this imaginary scene that I put on the poster of fireweed in the front and some mountains in the background and then distant sky and stuff like that. And we're just going to go step by step to take the fear of trying to figure out what to paint, how to paint it. They're simple shapes, big triangles, lines, and stuff like that. And we'll just go through it step by step, get started, and then just add layers and add layers and add layers and play with color. And people are going to end up, if they want, with, you know, this finished little painting, which that's not the point, really. But
no, it's to learn, right?
It's the way to get there.
Yeah, the process.
Yeah, and so they'll have a little little card of watercolor-ish paper that they'll paint on. I'm going to give them these little cards that have dried gouache paint on them.
Nice.
We're going to have brushes of some sort, water, a little sponge to change your color of water in, and then we'll just talk, because there are some people who are coming, I would assume, that already have done gouache and or are, you know, have done a lot of painting.
Then it's about the tips and tricks. And
yeah,
what you do
right,
for that.
And where to get the gear.
Yeah, right. And this is, it's again, it's at the museum on Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30, 395 mm-hmm. Whittier Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also free for members mm-hmm. of the museum, but it's also donation-based for non-members.
Yep.
And any donation amount is acceptable.
Right.
It's also, I just want to mention this, it's sponsored by the Friends of the Library, Archives, and Museum. Mm-hmm. And it's in cooperation with the Alaska State Museum. So this is a Friends of the Museum program.
Fo-slam.
Yeah, fo-slam, for sure. And it sounds really fantastic and wonderful. What a fun little project. When did you first start working with gouache?
I started working with gouache about 4 years ago. I think I took a Zoom class during COVID,
uh-huh.
and there was somebody using it, and I thought, well, you know, that looks interesting. And then being able to cover up your mistakes was very attractive to me. or I guess I could say modifying the painting.
Were you working in other kinds of watercolors before that?
Or? Not watercolors. I've done acrylic, oils, pastels. And with like acrylics and oils are great, but there's so much more setup involved.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to go out in the field or even just in your car, you know, a beautiful day like today, you don't have to be outside. You can be in your car with a nice cup of coffee and just do some little sketches with this little setup. And it's water-based, so you're not going to ruin your clothes, which I've done with acrylics and oils.
Yeah.
So that is the attraction for me. It's also a fun thing to take on a trip.
Right.
You know, travel stuff. It gives you something to do when you get home in the evening, and you can get your iPhone out and maybe do something from there. So to me, it's a real practical, portable, fun little addition to any kind of art practice.
I love that. Barbara Craver is going to be working this Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30 as part mm-hmm. of the Sketching in the Museum. Over at the Alaska State Museum, working with gouache. So if you're interested, check it out. You don't have to sign up or anything. You just show up, right?
Just show up. And
just
hopefully we'll
up.
Have enough little kits for everybody. And if not, we'll make do.
Share. That's so fun. Gunashchish. Thank you, Barbara.
Gunashchish.
We'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Local stories, local people, local connections made possible by you and your membership donation at ktoo.org. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Akbe 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. Gunashchish. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Have a wonderful Juno evening.